Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host, Belinda, and I'm excited about our guest today. I have Jeff DeGraff with me, and Jeff is both an advisor to Fortune 500 companies and a professor at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan. His simultaneously creative and pragmatic approach to making innovation happen has led clients and colleagues to dub him the Dean of Innovation. He has written several books, including Leading Innovation, Innovation U, and the Innovation Code. Jeff's thoughts on innovation are covered by Inc., Fortune, and Psychology Today. He has a regular segment on public radio called The Next Idea. His new book, The Creative Mindset, brings 6 creativity skills to everyone. It is my pleasure to welcome Jeff to our show today.
Thanks, Belinda. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, I love it. I love it that I'm having somebody local on our show. It's fun.
Yes, absolutely. It's a great place to live, too.
It is, absolutely. So, Jeff, let's just sort of fill in some of the gaps of your bio. Tell us a little bit more about you and, more importantly, about your journey.
Well, I'm originally from a working-class family. I'm from Kalamazoo. Very few people from my neighborhood kind of make it to where I've gotten to. And I don't know how much of it is hard work and how much of it's just luck. I was one of those classic blue-collar kids. I came up as an athlete and a teamster, and I wasn't a particularly good high school student, if you will. And for some reason, college and I liked each other, and at a very young age, I was 25, I became a PhD, and I was one of the last students of the person who founded design thinking. The man from the University of Berlin, Rudolf Arnheim, was my advisor. And I came to Ann Arbor to work in the medical school, being a professor at a very young age. And instead, I met a guy. This is how it always goes, right? I met a guy.
Yep.
I thought he was really cool. And he had a $20 million pizza company. And I said, you know, instead, I'm going to work for you. And 5 years and several billion dollars later, I helped him sell Domino's Pizza to Mitt Romney and Bain Capital. And I was one of the guys that built, at the time, the fastest growing company in America. And for the past 30 years, I've been a professor at the Ross School of Business. I built the Innovatrium, which is a sort of the prototype, if you've ever seen an innovation lab or the D School at Stanford or WeWork. I got there a little bit before everybody else did. And we have a number of them around the country, and we do a lot of work. And at this point, I think, Belinda, I've been in over half the Fortune 500 at the C-suite level. I do a lot of work with the military, governments, and some other programs for, you know, underserved kids, art museums, that sort of thing.
Oh, great. That's amazing. So let's talk a little bit about how the business has shaped your lifestyle today.
Well, you know, it was really interesting because, remember, I didn't go right from being a graduate student into the academy. I decided instead to build a business. So when I went back and became a business school professor, I got kind of antsy that it was a little, it wasn't hands-on enough for me. So what I did was I had a meeting with some senior officials, and I said, is it okay with my own money if I build this institute, the Innovatrium Institute for Innovation? And amazingly, I got permission. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to apprentice young people in the same way that the Juilliard School works for music, if you will.
Yep.
You know, that classic see one, do one, teach one, where the best, you know, innovators from the work that I had been doing, you know, from Apple and Google and everywhere else, you know, Boeing, come in and they work with young people. And young people over time develop these amazing skills. And so how it shaped my lifestyle is I wanted to have a portfolio life. I knew that there wasn't a job for me, Belinda, that was going to be the right job. So I knew I had to build it. And that's what I did. I built a job where every day I get to work with cool new people. And every day I get to work on a cool new project.
That's awesome. So how do you think you identified that that is really the route that you needed to go. Like, I need to create my own job.
You know,
but still within an institute, because some people would say, oh, well, you have to go off and be an entrepreneurial. So you're sort of like this entrepreneurial spirit within sort of a corporation.
Well, I actually built it. I own it. So it doesn't belong to the university. All this stuff belongs to me. So it is a company. You're exactly right in your instincts on this. I don't think I've ever been one of those people that had an unbelievable compass, like I want to be a doctor or any of that. I didn't grow up wanting to be a business school professor. I have no training in business school, for crying out loud. I just get attracted to things and things that give me a lot of energy. And one of the things that gave me a ton of energy was I really like creating things that are of a whole different order of magnitude than other people do. So meaning I'm not very interested in sort of designing a better mousetrap. I'm very interested in how do I build out, early in my career, AppleNet, which became Connect, which became iTunes. How do you build something that's systematic and has a lot of moving parts and is interesting? Mm-hmm. And so I just created this space, this treehouse, if you will, Belinda, for me to hang out with my fun friends who are more creative and more intelligent than I am.
Well, that's pretty amazing and pretty awesome at the same time. So let's talk about your skill sets. So let's talk about sort of your superpowers, if you will. What do you think are a couple of your skill sets that have really helped push you forward?
Well, you know, it's funny because when I think of this question, most of the things I think about is what I really stink at. And so, it's more trying to avoid the things that I'm not good at. I think I'm really good at a couple things. I coined the term creativizing, right? And I just simply mean, Belinda, taking something ordinary or seeing in something ordinary, something extraordinary. I don't think it's an amazing skill like people think it is. When I was very young, I was an advisor to Steve Jobs. And I think people, if they don't have a particular skill, they sort of mystify it. They make it sort of more than it is. I think what happens is my skill is sort of like the old MacGyver television program, if you know what I mean.
I
look at a bunch of junk and my brain begins to figure out how it goes together. And the other side of that, Belinda, to be honest with you, is if somebody explains something to me in a sequential way, I have real trouble putting it together. I don't understand how it works. So I'm a pattern seeker, the synthesizer kind of person. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my super skill. And we can call that creativity, but there's other kinds of creativity too. I think that's one. I think the other part that goes with that is I'm fast. I'm quite fast in my ability to make sense out of things. And I think those two things together kind of created the whole innovatrium idea of, can you take a very complicated problem and put it someplace for a couple days with the right people, shake up the box, and see what comes out of that. And what's important about that also is diversity of thinking produces what's called constructive conflict, positive conflict. And that's what produces innovation. And that's why there's a handful of places in this planet that produce almost all the intellectual property, and that's what they have in common.
Wow. So I love, though, that you started with you avoid doing the things you're not good at. And I think that that is an important skill set as well. I think it's important for people to identify the things either they simply don't enjoy doing or that they're not good at, and find really strong people around you that can serve you in that area.
Yeah, I certainly have my share of blind spots. So, for example, I'll give you a real example for your listeners. I'm very good at spotting somebody who can do something. I'm really good at it. What I'm really bad at is I don't know emotionally why they don't do it. I'm not one of those real high EQ guys. I'm like a football coach. This person's this height and should be able to run this way. So I don't hire. I have other people in my firm hire. I've had a lot of higher order mathematics. My PhD is in a technology area, but I don't think in terms of finance. So somebody else runs finance. So I don't really run the business. This is important for people to get. Mm-hmm. The old saying used to be you can work on the business or in the business. And the whole point was entrepreneurs should work on the business. I decided that was a bad idea. I want to work in the business and I hired people to work on the business. And that's how it works.
And I think that's fantastic. I think that is being really smart in identifying what you're good at and what you're not, and letting really smart people do the things that, and it really comes down to not just what you're good at, because I think people confuse that with, well, I can become good at that. I can learn it well enough. And, but it's like, do you want to do it? Does it bring you joy? Does it get your creativity going? Does it make you excited to get to work every day? And that's what really is, that's like the whole premise of our podcast is working from your happy place, doing what you love, just getting up every day and being excited to get there and be present in the moment.
I think that's so true. I think a really good indicator for me is what gives me energy and what takes my energy. Mm-hmm. And I pay a lot of it. I'm in the point of my life where I get to pick and choose. A lot of people don't. But, you know, it was a long road to get here. But I think what's also interesting is I think about skills like superheroes. And I think it's less about what we want to do, Belinda, and it's more about what we're designed to do. You know, we have certain natural talents, or we've had experiences, or we have certain education. So we have some abilities that are unique, but it's like being superheroes. We also have weaknesses. And if you ever, I love those Marvel movies, right? Mm-hmm. Where when they get together, what you find at the beginning is individually, they all have these great skills, and they think that the best skills are theirs, right? And then,
And then
what happens is we get a common enemy or dilemma, and what we find out is their individual skills aren't enough. And then they have to rely on other people with different skills. And I think that's a really nice metaphor. And so it's not just about what brings you joy. It's about what gets you energy, which mm-hmm. is a little different concept, if you know what I mean. What I'm talking about is, your listeners, I'm sure, can relate to this. There are times where I'll wake up at 2:00 in the morning with an idea, and I'll work all the way through to morning, and I'll work all day, and I'm not tired because I've been enlivened by the idea. Mm-hmm. Right. It's not so much that I'm, you know, happy, happy, joy, joy. It's more that I'm on fire, you know.
Yes. I totally get that. I always say it's like your energy clock. It gets refueled. The more excited you are and energized that you are, the more that you want to do. Like it's time doesn't even, it just seems like it slips away. And yet, yeah, if you're doing things that suck all of your energy out of you, it seems like time takes forever.
Yeah. And flow states are so important in well-being, isn't it, Belinda?
Yes.
I bet there are people out there who can identify three people at work that every time they're around them, they just blossom. And they can also identify three people at work that they would rather not encounter because it just kind of takes all the light out of them.
Every bit of it. I agree 100%. So let's talk about outstanding accomplishments. It sounds like you've had so many, but is there any that like sort of stand out for you or that's super meaningful?
Well, there's the accomplishments that other people think are big, right? You know, so I've worked on a lot of very well-known innovation projects that were very large, right? And that's great. It's a job. So when somebody wants to talk about, something that got built, they almost always want to talk about, you must be an eco warrior, or you must really care about, you know, medicine. And don't get me wrong, I do, but I worked on it because it was interesting. It was an innovation project. What really I think I'm most proud of is two things. I think one, I think anybody who's decided to give their life to being a professor has to be most proud of their students and the young people that they've raised up so that we have another generation of innovators in this world. And I think the second thing is the school of thought that I worked on or helped create, but in all honesty, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants in my work. So my work is largely an extension, if you will, or building out the work of some other researchers that brought me to the university. So I think those two things, students, And what I've added to the world of creativity and innovation.
Great. So is there a particular challenge or obstacle that you faced that that stands out? And then how did you choose to work through that?
Well, I'm pretty terrible at detail work. And I have really, I'm allergic, Belinda, to bureaucracy. And I act out. I'm one of the things that I'm embarrassed to say, if you get to a certain level of success, I think you get a little more leeway. But I really don't like it when somebody gives me a rule and they're they can't explain how the rule helps things. I'm not against rules, but I'm in favor of, tell me why we need to do it this way. So you can imagine, I work in a, you know, I do a lot of work for the military and I work in a large university. So you can imagine that doesn't go very well sometimes for me. And the way I work through that is twofold. One, I try and act more like a grown-up Jeff and say, this is something that has to be done. Somebody has to do this job. You know, it's not, they're not intentionally doing this. So one is finding that emotional place where you are a little more empathetic to other people, right? Because we need them. And a lot of times when I get to that point, really amazing things happen. And the second, I think the way that I've had to deal with this is a lot more kind of what I would call self-reflection, where, you know, my instincts when I would have been younger would have been to go around or just to, you know, sort of, figure out how to defeat the system. I think getting older, it's more like, well, you know, maybe that's your issue, Jeff, and maybe you have to work through, why your reaction to what I would call control freaks. Of course, they're not control freaks, but why I have to work through that. So I don't think there's a clever, patch for this. I think it's more like understanding your weakness, and rather than trying to be really fortify your weakness, just try and make your weakness a little less of a weakness.
Very good. I heard you mention empathy. There's been a lot of articles written, things published on empathy in the workplace and how important it is. And it's something that has been missing for many, many years.
Yeah. And I'd add to empathy, diversity. I think the big thing is there's a business concept here called identification and valuation. It's a marketing concept, right? But basically it means we identify with certain things and we love people agreeing with us. But those people aren't particularly useful or helpful to our lives. They don't help us grow. They just reinforce all the nonsense that we currently believe. And I really like the fact that diversity, all kinds of diversity, cognitive diversity, all kinds of diversity are becoming an issue. And the reason is twofold. One, it's a practical issue. When it comes to creativity or innovation, people have different ideas, are much more likely to create a third or hybrid idea. Lennon and McCartney, think about the Beatles, or, you know, Buffett and Munger. Think about people really successful that way. And a lot of marriages are like that, too. People have very different skill sets. But I think the other part of it that I think is maybe a deeper part of it is trying to understand why somebody is the way they are, right? It's not just that people didn't just show up this way. And boy, wouldn't it be great if politically and on all kind of different realms, if we could be a little more empathetic and a little more walk in somebody else's shoes for a while.
Yep, absolutely. So what does working from your happy place mean to you?
Well, a few things. First of all, I'd say, to me, happiness is not the word I would use, although I know it's the name of the podcast. I would say to me, happiness is meaningfulness. It means that what I'm doing is meaningful. Because a lot of times I work, you know, you have to imagine, Linda, I'm on an airplane all the time. Well, other than recently, although even now I'm still on airplanes a lot. And so that's a lot of work. And you have to go a lot of places and do things that are uncomfortable and things that you'd rather sleep in or whatever. I don't get to do those things, and I haven't my entire professional life. But when you do something that's really meaningful, meaning that you're going to make a difference in somebody's life, you're actually using your gifts that you've developed, you're moving in a way that you have a sense of destiny about something, I think that's what makes a difference in my life. And I think what's happened is that the more I've been true to that North Star, if you will, following your energy, following the things that you're really good at, having a sense of destiny, the better and better and better my life has become, right? The more my life has become authentic. And I get a lot of young people, a lot of young entrepreneurs, and a lot of young professors who want to talk to me. And I think they're confused at the beginning. because what they want to talk about is the success. That's what they want. They want to talk about, you know, sort of the money and all that. And that's all good. That's nice. But that's not the reason you do it, right? And that's not how you got here. That's not how you got here. How you got here was doing what you're designed to do. What just keep doing what you're designed to do. And then let the chips fall where they may, you know. So maybe success in your life is freedom, or you've helped somebody out in your life, or you have a deep sense of accomplishment. Those are all really valuable things. And I hope we can remember that there's a lot more to life than just making a few bucks.
Great. Well, you have a brand new book that just came out. Why don't we talk about that a little bit? Let's tell our listeners a little bit about your book and why they might want it.
Yeah, along with my wife, I write these days with my wife, Stanny, who's the smarter of the two of us, I should point out. The book is called The Creative Mindset, Mastering the Six Skills That Empower Innovation. And what the book is about is it's taking 30-some years, 35, 36, 37 years of working with the top companies in the world and being a professor, one of the founding professors in this area for years and years and years, and boiling it all down into everyday language and into some very simple skills that people can learn. And you don't have to want to be Steve Jobs. You can maybe want to, you know, have a side hustle with making that recipe, you know, that you've always, people have told you is so great, and do something with it. It could be something you do with your church group. It could be something you're doing with your family. It doesn't have to be big. This is the whole idea of creativizing, taking the ordinary and turning it into something extraordinary. So I wrote this book for what I'm going to call, Belinda, the democratization of innovation. I don't know. I'm a man of a certain age, and I don't know how old your listeners are, but when I grew up, you know, everybody kind of had something going on in the kitchen or something going on, you know, down at the corner or in the garage. And it's my sort of love letter, and it's a very simple, easy to follow guide to people who want to do that again, of saying you're capable of doing this. And incidentally, there's a whole series of support tools that go with it. So it's not like it's abstract. It's like, here's how to do this thing. And it starts with something as simple as how to think like an innovator, you know? And it gets to something more elaborate, like, you know, how do you actually clarify what the challenge is, and how do you evaluate it? How do you find that winning idea? And it's everything in between. And so it's a short read, it's an easy read, and it's kind of written, it's written for everyone. And one of the neat things, it's now being picked up by a lot of colleges and a lot of senior high schools who are trying to take maybe young people who haven't had all the chances in the world that maybe I've had, giving them a chance to apply their own creative abilities.
Oh, that's great. I know I'm going to grab it. It sounds like it's an awesome book, and it's something that we all need to sort of explore, that creative side of, you know, a lot of people sit and they have an idea or they have a thought and then they just don't ever act on it. And I think having some skill sets and tools that can just allow people to, I love the whole thing with that special recipe. I mean, how many people do you talk to that say, oh, you know, you make the best, whatever it is, peanut brittle. but they've absolutely never done a single thing with it.
You're so right. How many people do you know that come up to you and say, hey, I've always thought about doing a podcast, but you've been doing it. See, that's exactly what we want people to do, is to say, you know, that there's a winning idea, but you have to do it, right? That's why you've been successful at this, Belinda.
Yeah, and it's never been an easy road. I think people want it to just be cut and dry, but it is a very, it's an interesting road because it's a discovery and you find different ways to make that vision come to pass. And then you meet different people. It's a whole series of learning and networking and failing and doing it better. And then you end up with something that you're really super proud of.
You know, I want to come back to what I said earlier, because you're doing a perfect job exemplifying what I was saying. So even in your happy place, it's not just about being happy. It's about doing the worthy thing. And that's what you've done. You know, there's been some rough days, haven't there, in this? Getting where you want to go with working from your happy place. Yeah. But because it was meaningful and worthy, you've taken some joy in that. That's we're on the same page about that.
Absolutely.
It's not easy. It's a lot of shoulder to the wheel stuff, and there's some dark nights of the soul. But if you're doing work that's meaningful, you know, ultimately, and has purpose, is purposeful, you'll keep moving forward.
And it's exhilarating in the end. Like, it's just like, you know, that, and it's so true, and you probably, this one is one you won't relate to, but all the lady listeners out there will, but they always say, as soon as you have a baby, like, you forget about the pain. You just, as soon as you have it, you forget all about the pain that you just went through, because this is, it's so much joy, and it's so incredible, and that's why people go back and do it again. It's like, okay, and it's the same thing. Like, it's like you go through a lot of pain, but then at the end, with the result, is so exhilarating that you really don't stop and dwell on how much pain that caused or how awful it was. You dwell on, this is so incredible, and it's going to impact a lot of lives, and it's pretty exciting. So I think that that's what people have this great fear of, this failing and the struggle and what it's going to be like and what they got to go through. But at the end of the day, you don't even, I mean, not that you don't forget it completely, but it's just like, you don't dwell on it. You know, it's not part of, oh yeah, this is successful, but you should have seen what I went through to get here. Like, people that have made great things happen, they're just happy.
And you should feel really proud, because one of the things that's happened, at least in my lifetime, is that, you know, when I came up and started consulting, there were no senior leader women executives. And now there's a lot of them. And in fact, the fastest growing entrepreneurial group by demography is women, right? So the notion is, yes, women have decided that they don't have to be perfect, and that they can fail forward. You know, men have been doing it for a long time. I could talk to my wife, she'll tell you all the things that are imperfect about me after almost 30 years of marriage, right? So the notion is, yes, I think that I think it's an apt metaphor. It is like having a child. Not that I would know. I haven't had one, but I've fathered a few.
There you go. All right. So what advice would you give to others sort of wanting to go down this entrepreneurial road or this creativity road, or kind of getting excited listening to you and thinking, all right, I'm going to act on this? And what advice would you give?
A few things. Number one, know what your truly unique skill is. You know, don't be that person who everyone says, oh, you can sing really great, and you go on that American Idol, tryout, and you mm-hmm. are terrible. Focus on what you're truly unique at, what you're one of a kind at. And if you come up with five things, you have four too many, right? What is it that's special about you? And it can be anything, but talk to people who really know you. Anything that's not that, outsource it. Get rid of it. And don't make excuses. It's not about money. You can trade. You know, you can trade. There are a lot of ways to come up with solutions. Don't do the things that you're not great at. And the reason is, they'll take up all your time. They'll be the things that you hate to do, right? So, mm-hmm. And I don't mean this like a rich person, go have the peasants do it. I don't mean that at all. I just mean you have to be honest with yourself about what you're really unique at. And entrepreneurs who are, I think, build the company in such a way that the second thing I would tell them to do is hire away from your skill base. So I don't need another Jeff in my company. We've been highly successful in the innovation consulting space, maybe one of the five or six most successful firms in the space. But the point is, they don't need another me. I need something else. I need different skills. So you have to change the gene pool, right? And that's really important. And it's very important. The final part is, you want positive tension. Yeah, you want Lennon and McCartney. You know, when they were separate, they weren't nearly as good as they were together. You need somebody else saying, that's not quite right. Have you thought about this? That's really not going to work that way. Somebody who's going to push back, not in a negative way. I'm not talking about horrible conflict, which we see all the time on the web and every place else. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about somebody who cares about you and is helping you get to the other place. It's like marriages. I don't know how else to put this, Belinda. You know, you ever notice in good marriages, if they know how to argue, right? You watch them. Watch old people. Watch people married for 50 years. They know how to argue. It's sort of like they figured it out. You know, couples that never argue, they don't last very long, do they? And couples mm-hmm. that argue in the wrong way, things blow up. And well, the same is true for your business. You know, find some people who have different ideas than you. Find a way to have those discussions, those difficult tension discussions, in a way that gets you to the next place. And I think you'll be amazed.
Wow, we could do a whole podcast on that, couldn't we?
Yeah, we could. We sure could.
Absolutely. All right. So what are some new and exciting things that you're working on that our listeners might benefit from? And then make sure you can tell people how they can find you, how they find your book.
Okay. Well, the newest thing is the Creative Mindset is out. Actually, it comes out today. So I don't know when this is being broadcast, but it's out. Let's just tell your listeners it's out right now. And true to my form, I'm writing another book with my wife, Stanny, about change. So that'll be the trilogy, the three books, The Innovation Code, The Creative Mindset, and then this new book on change, which I haven't named yet. The other thing that I'm really working a lot on is I'm working with the military, and I'm working with the Smithsonian on building a curriculum for young people to be innovators, and particularly young people who are underserved. And so there's a whole curriculum around that we're working on with the state of Maryland and about 40 metropolitan areas around the country to help young people realize their dream. Because I think it's important, as an American at least, I think it's important to have a next generation of Americans who are trying to make things better and new.
Well, that is amazing. Jeff, thank you so much. This has been such a great session. I've enjoyed it so much, such a great interview. And I'm really excited about the work you're doing. And it is exciting to think about the next generation coming up and making sure that kids do have that creativity and innovation. It's and have opportunities to be able to express that. So
if your listeners are interested in these things, they can go to jeffdegraff.com. There's a lot of information there. They can follow me on LinkedIn. I'm one of the original 25 LinkedIn influencers. So I'm one of the original LinkedIn guys. You find me on LinkedIn, and between those two places, you could probably learn more about this stuff than you probably care to learn. But at least there's a lot of resources there if you'd like them.
Great, and I'm guessing your book is on Amazon.
My book is on Amazon, and also don't forget your local bookseller. They probably could use some help.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thanks once again, Jeff, so much for being our guest today. And thanks to all of our listeners out there. And if you enjoyed today's interview, which I don't know how in the world you couldn't have, it was amazing. Please make sure that you subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode. And feel free to rate the show or give us a review. We always appreciate that. Once again, Jeff, thanks so much for being here.
Linda, thanks
today.
For having me on. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.